Do you want to do a podcast?
I'm not joining in with this.
Why? It'll be really fun.
I still have credibility, so.
We'll talk about politics and social issues. La, la, la. Hello, this is The Right Dishonourable. My name is Jazza.
My name's Jimmy.
And we talk about weekly the social political issues that we think we can get some decent and like fun chat out of. I wasn't here last week, and John stood in. He did a fantastic job, although I was banging my head against the table when you were talking about what's the scientist's name?
Tim Hunt. It would be good if you could remember his name.
Yeah,
you
know, Tim Hunt. Like he's just the sexist scientist now in my head.
The sexy scientist.
I mean, there were loads. That's the problem, right? The scientists are too sexy. We won't get into this because we actually managed to like talk about this for about 30 minutes before we started recording.
Yeah,
but if you want to go back and listen to that recording, go onto the rightdishonourable.com. Just rightdishonourable.com.
Rightdishonourable.com, yeah.
And you
just can remember while you're listening to that segment that Jazza was not happy about it.
Yeah, and just
have that in your head.
Just remember that I do not endorse John and Jimmy's analysis of that particular story. This week, we are going to be talking about leadership again. I feel like this is all that we talk about in this bloody podcast.
Well, we could just talk about leadership in Greece for, you know, yeah, for the past two months, and that would have been fine.
We could. But we're going to speak specifically about the Telegraph's, the newspaper's campaign to try and get all of their readers to join the Labour Party and then vote for Jeremy Corbyn, the left-wing candidate for Labour leadership.
And also the evidence picked up by the New Statesman that Corbyn might actually be leading the Labour leadership race at the moment.
I mean, great. And then also we're going to touch briefly on the fact that the party that we both support, the Liberal Democrats, have a new leader in Tim Farron, who...
Jazza's really, really pleased about
He's literally happy.
It's hard to describe the ecstasy in his face at the moment at the prospect of Farron leading the
party. It's a really good job that my facial expressions are the same for ecstasy and intense pain. Secondly, I went to Russia to talk to some LGBT people while I was out there in the last week, which is why I wasn't here last week on the podcast. And I'm going to be talking about what it was like to be there in Russia. Finally, we will be chatting briefly about the fact that our queen did a Nazi salute when she was 7 years old.
We've all done things we regret.
Like so many. A lot of mine is documented on the internet. But we... So, that like, listen to what we have... I'm always really awkward with this segue. There's going to be music now. Listen to that and then we'll talk. Leadership.
It sounds like you're about to start a speech.
I am, essentially.
A TED talk of some sort.
My monologue.
What is leadership?
Leadership is apparently trying to sabotage the Labour Party. This is basically the Telegraph, which is on the right of the British press, has posted an article really clearly stating how its readers can join the Labour Party for like £2 or £3.
Yes.
And then they would be able to vote in the leadership election. They want their readers to vote for Jeremy Corbyn so that Labour becomes quote-unquote unelectable for a generation. And this sits really horribly with me. How do you feel about it, Jimmy?
I actually quite like Corbyn. Not because I necessarily agree with his views, but he's actually quite rare in these days being a prominent politician who actually has some principles that they're willing to stand by. It sort of comes back to that old Tony Benn cliche about whether you're in politics, there are weather vanes and there are signposts, and Corbyn in this metaphor is very much a signpost. And I actually quite like that about him as a Labour leader, and I think were he to be elected, Labour would actually stand for something far more than they do at the moment, which at the moment they seem to stand for just being in power, basically.
Oh, then fair point. But also it does mean that they would never be able to win back the seats that they lost to the Conservatives and Well, they'd probably win back some more seats in Scotland.
Well, I think some socialist or social democratic policies are actually far more popular than you'd necessarily mm-hmm. appreciate reading the right-wing press. The one that comes immediately to mind is the nationalisation of the rail services,
yeah.
which is really, really popular. I think it's something like three quarters of the country.
Three thirds. All 100% of our 77 million people. Yes.
It already sounds like I'm a propagandist for someone. Yeah. Anyway, three quarters of the population, I think, are in favour of nationalising the rail services. Obviously, most people in the country support the NHS and mm-hmm. are worried about the alleged privatisation of it. So there's actually... The country's, in some ways, far more left-wing than people necessarily give credit for. Mm-hmm. And I think... I don't want to buy too much into this analysis of Ed Miliband's campaign that it was... They didn't put the message across clearly, but I think in Corbyn's case, there's a niche that can be carved out, and maybe it is time that Labour accepted a slightly diminished role in that sense in British politics, rather than just being the sole oppositional party that has to take in everyone on the left.
Away from Corbyn's politics, what do you think about this campaign that has kind of been gathering speed in the online space for a while to try and sabotage Labour, essentially? Because for me personally, I tweeted about this. I said the Tories have been trying to shake off the nasty party image, and this is just them being the bloody nasty party again, isn't it? And it's, although it's completely legitimate that people can join the party and then democratically vote for the leader of Labour, which I think is a fantastic thing, and that should be something that most parties should do. It should be noted that that's not how the Conservatives elect true. Their leader. All of their elections are done behind closed doors. And obviously anybody can partake in Labour's election as long as they pay the £3, but it's deliberate sabotage. And it just makes... I'm just like, let them form the kind of opposition that Labour supporters want to form. Don't be a dick. Why are they being dicks, Jimmy?
Well, for long-term electoral advantage.
Yes, but...
I don't know. I don't know what else you want me to say. You know?
No, but so how does that sit with you, though? Do you think... Does it?
Obviously, it's a shitty thing to do, but, you know, all's fair in love, war and politics, I suppose.
So you'd be okay for them deliberately trying to sabotage?
I'm not happy about it, but I don't see, you know, beyond me saying I condemn this. The Right Dishonourable have come out condemning the move by the Tories to sign up fraudulently for the Labour election and vote
for Corbyn. I'll put that in the description just so it's written and clear.
You know, yeah, it's bad. But it's also...
Can they do anything about it?
Well, there are certain rules within the way the... Because this works via an affiliate membership of some sort. You pay £3, but it says in the T&Cs that you actually have to...
Terms and conditions.
You actually have to... Thanks for explaining that. You have to be a genuine supporter of the Labour Party, and you can't belong to any other political party. Mm-hmm. So they've said, actually, if they detect that any of these sign-ups are fraudulent, that they'll just, like, strike them off the list and people won't get their money back. Mm-hmm. So,
but then how can you prove that?
Well, in the case of some, there was a journalist from The Spectator called Toby Young who was doing it and tweeting about it, and they somehow managed to find his application, and then they just said, no, you can't vote, and just kept his £3. So sure he was devastated.
Most people, tell he gets to buy his Starbucks coffee tomorrow morning. aside from people who have public personas and are writing for newspapers, though, how are they going to be able to regulate that? Like, I feel like there isn't an actual way that they're going to be able to viably make sure that everybody voting in the Labour leadership election is genuinely a supporter of the party.
But in the American primaries, you can, when it comes to presidential candidates, which is obviously kind of relevant now, you can either sign up to vote in the Democratic primary or the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And you don't actually have to be a member of either of those parties or even a supporter of either of those parties, because you might be... you might feel that you want to sign up for the, say you're a Democrat, not you normally vote Democrat, but you might want to sign up for the Republican primary so you can vote for a more left-wing candidate and therefore skew the, mm-hmm. you know, the presidential nominee very slightly. I mean, that would be an obvious thing to do now, given that Hillary Clinton is probably going to win, you know, the Democrat mm-hmm. Nomination, whatever happens.
Bernie Sanders. Can you feel the burn? Hashtag feel the burn.
That is terrible.
It's actually happening.
It's happening.
So I have a theory of how Labour can deal with this.
Yes.
Corbyn needs to stop running. Because he was kind of like... He was always seen as a bit of a joke candidate, right? Yeah, Maybe not a joke candidate.
Like four weeks ago, we said, oh yeah, Corbyn's running. He won't get on the ballot paper, so we barely need to talk about him.
Yeah, and now
he's almost winning.
Yeah. And now he's... Is he in second place behind Burnham?
If we predict he wins, does that mean he won't? Is that how it works?
Oh, fuck yeah. We predict a Corbyn landslide.
And then he'll win, and we'll be like, wow, these guys are geniuses. Yeah,
great. But so I think that he should step down because he was lent votes from the MPs in the Labour Party.
He was, but now he has the backing of Unite, which is the biggest trade union in Britain. He has the backing of, if not the most, then sort of joint most with Burnham of Labour constituencies as well. And obviously, if the polling is to be believed, the internal polling that the New Statesman found, then he's obviously got quite a high chance of winning. So why should he stand down at this point?
Because people are voting for him to try and make Labour unelectable. Isn't the whole point to have a leader to make the party electable? So you're saying that they should kind of accept that they are never going to be the biggest party anymore. People were saying the same thing about the Tories in the 1990s and in the 2000s, that they just need to accept that they're never going to be able to form a majority again. And yeah, granted, the majority is like three. But
I just don't see the point. I mean... I think politically I'm probably closer to the to some elements of the Tory party than the Labour Party, but I don't see the point of the Labour Party just being this kind of diluted Tory party. I don't, you know, yes, they can win elections under someone like Blair, and they can, maybe they'll be slightly nicer or they'll have slightly more agreeable policies when they govern, but I don't see the point in them. I mean,
but
what is the point of the Labour Party?
If people want to vote left wing, why not vote Green? They're nutty enough. They want to nationalise the railways. No offence to my green-leaning friends.
But obviously Labour are a far more credible force in terms of actually bringing about those policies if they were actually to, you know, go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right. Well, so that's the right dishonourable conclusion.
Don't we need to talk about the Lib Dems?
Yeah. No, so, I'm moving
you're gonna segue.
On to... Yeah, I was about to segue and you just ruined my segue.
We're usually so professional.
Oh, God, Jimmy, you're ruining everything. So Tim Farron won. I think I've made it really clear on this podcast in the past how I feel about Tim Farron winning.
Why don't you
winning.
Like Tim Farron jazzer?
Oh, I wonder why. The fact that he maybe went on national news and kind of, in order to avoid calling all gay people sinners, he called everyone a sinner. And, like, he's a fantastic orator. And I got really excited about his speech, as everybody else did. And I tried to start a hashtag called To Right Tim. It didn't really catch on. I think one other person used it. But the fact is, his voting record is still kind of casting a shadow over his whole leadership.
It's not
when
that,
it comes
it's
to
not
gay marriage.
It's not
the fact
actually
that he
as
abstained.
Bad on gay marriage as...
It is on abortion rights.
It isn't, yeah, I agree on that. But his voting record on gay marriage is generally pretty good. It's just he did abstain in that one vote. Mm-hmm. But it was the third reading of a bill, which is the important reading of a bill, is actually the second reading. That's when most of the debate happens. The third reading is largely... I can't remember what it's...
Ticking boxes.
Yeah, mm. I mean... I feel that his defence of his...
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Farron.
Okay. I mean, that's fine.
I think...
like, whatever, do you
the
want.
Right Dishonourable podcast might be over. Okay. After that. But I voted for Farron because I found... He is a far better speaker than Lamb, and I do actually think that that matters in politics.
Mm-hmm. Although he does look like a Dennis the Menace character.
He does, that is true.
Yeah.
Absolutely does. But as far as his Christianity goes, he is still a secularist. He doesn't actually believe in forcing his religion down other people's throats. And even if he does, he's not that hot on gay marriage and abortion rights. He has no plans to restrict them, so...
Yeah, you know. I know. But it's just the fact that we are kind of in a world where that is going to be pounced on and that people are going to... kind of like make him uncredible and make the Lib Dems uncredible because of his personal views. Don't you think that that is going to be holding back the Lib Dems going forward, because the person at the head of the party is holds those personal views, and that's going to be a distraction? That's what my problem was and what my issue was.
It might be a problem, but I suspect the press will get bored of it after a week or two. No, I mean, maybe
touch wood.
Maybe it'll come back and, you know, scupper them later, but I still feel that even if you bear that in mind, he was still the best candidate. You know, maybe the best out of not necessarily a great bunch, but...
You say a great bunch, there were two. I feel like a bunch needs at least three.
You know, you see my point, right? Did you vote for Lamb then?
Yeah, I did vote for Lamb. Okay.
One of the 43.5%.
Yeah, which actually, I was quite impressed at how close. So I know in the grand scheme of things that isn't actually very close, but I thought that that was closer than I thought it was.
He did better than what he was predicted to do.
Yeah.
I thought about voting for him.
Do you know that his son is a music producer and works with Dappy from N-Dubs?
I don't know what to think now.
I know. So we had the father of the person who brought the world N-Dubs and somebody who thinks homosexuality is a sin.
I mean, you know.
The Liberal Democrats, people. Liberal Democrats, everybody. Let's just... Leadership. I went to Russia because I'm currently fun employed.
That's not a thing.
It's a thing. And I wanted to be able... I have a friend who's working out there, and there was the opportunity to go, and international relations are only getting worse. So I was like, fuck it, I have another visa in my passport. And managed to sit down and talk to some LGBT folks while I was there.
So the general impression from the outside is that LGBT rights not great in Russia. Did you find that was true when you were chatting to these people?
I mean, generally, in the grand scheme of things, correct. Although homosexuality isn't illegal in itself. Mm. There are actually laws protecting gay people from discrimination based on their sexuality. Obviously, are sporadically enforced.
Right, yeah.
And there's also... So it's obviously a lot more dangerous to be out and open about your sexuality in Russia. However... There is, especially amongst young people and the middle classes, which are still growing in Russia, it's becoming more and more socially liberal, not because of policies that are being dictated from the government, but because people are coming out. And so there's kind of been the phenomenon in Russia recently, and a lot of this fear mongering about homosexuality is the fact that young queer Russian people have been able to get information from abroad about like sexuality, and they find that gay is a thing. It's like, oh fuck, that's what I am, which is kind of every gay person's experience of discovering their sexuality. It's like, I'm different. And then they find out that gay is a thing. It's like, oh, I'm one of them. And so there was probably a wave of gay teens and gay young people coming out in like the mid-noughties, and all of Orthodox Russia kind of lost its shit and were like, oh my god, what the fuck is happening? And that's kind of how the queer community in Russia has become chastised.
So is the church and religion still quite important in Russia then?
I got to talk to a couple of Russian homophobes.
Okay.
Which was really fun. And they were actually really sweet. But they were very much like, look, the way that the West comes at it is incredibly different to the way that Russia comes at it, because Russia has an incredibly strong Orthodox tradition. And it is going to take Russia a long time to come to terms with homosexuality as like a normal part of life. And it's still not a normal part of life here, by the way.
What do you mean by that?
I mean I still get catcalled in the street when I walk down the road with my boyfriend and holding his hand.
Sure.
Like those kinds of experiences. But still, I mean, happen here.
You mentioned that, but there was a video which you sent over to me taken in Russia, which you said you wanted to talk about. And if I describe this video, basically it's of these two gay Russians holding their hands as they walk around Moscow, and it's just a video of the various kind of reactions that people sort of give to them. Some of them like give them funny looks, some of them swear at them, mm-hmm. or, you know, abuse them. It's in Russian, I can't really tell. I assume it's
there
abuse.
Were subtitles.
In Russian as well.
Oh.
Well, the one I saw anyway. Okay. And some people actually shoulder barge them, and one guy even sort of runs into the middle of them so that he actually breaks up their mm-hmm. hands and, you know, then sort of corners one at the side of the street. And, you know, was that the sort of atmosphere that you actually got when you were in Russia? Did you actually get the sense that if I was holding my boyfriend's hand, that would be what would happen?
So I feel like Russia at the moment in terms of queer rights is very similar to the UK in the 1980s. We had Section 28, which was actually an even stronger anti-gay law in terms of gay propaganda, in quotation marks, than the current law that they have in Russia, in terms of it stopped people working in public sector jobs if they were openly gay, and specifically education. And when I saw that, like, Russian, like, the two guys holding hands and walking through really busy parts of Russia that have an awful lot of tourists from other parts of Russia that are less socially liberal than places like Moscow, it's like, of course it's going to fucking happen.
Okay.
Because those... So it would be like me choosing not to hold my boyfriend's hand as I walk down the road in, like, Croydon on a Friday night, for example, because I assess that environment is not safe.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was obviously a lot of uproar about, oh my God, isn't it horrible being a gay person in Russia? But then I experienced the kind of, not like the shoulder barging and the loud abuse, but I experience homophobia on the street whenever I hold my boyfriend's hand. In the West, in a country where we have gay marriage, in a country where gay people are meant to have almost universal rights, and I find it really hypocritical that people are like, oh my God, isn't it so good that we live in a country where this doesn't happen? Fuck you, homophobia still happens on the street here in the UK, and all across the West, and all across America, and have some perspective, just because you aren't aware that it happens because you're straight, or because you're a gay person who happens to have not experienced it, does not mean that it doesn't happen at all. And I feel like because we have gay marriage, we've talked about this before in the podcast.
It is worse in Russia, though, isn't it?
Of course it's worse in Russia. Of course it's worse in Russia, but in many ways it's better in Russia than it was in, like, the 1980s in the UK, I feel.
Oh.
And you kind of have to appreciate that Russia has only kind of been modernizing in the past, like, 20 years, and we were meant and the gay liberation movement in the West started in, like, the 60s and the 70s, and we've only just got gay marriage almost in most, like, Western liberal countries.
But so, some people have argued that the regime under Vladimir Putin has actually gone to some level to actually sort of legitimise homophobia by enforcing rules. You mentioned the sort of Section 28 equivalent, and there are also the crackdowns against the Pussy Riot protests, which were in part related to LGBT rights, among other things. So, what you say is probably true about homophobia does exist in every country, but there is a sense that Russia is actually going the wrong way, isn't there?
There is, and I was talking to one Russian gay guy who actually hated people like Pussy Riot and the gay protesters, because all he wants to do is to be able to live in a flat with his boyfriend and just get on with his fucking life. And he found that when he would come out to people at work or family members, there was initial uncomfortableness. If uncomfortableness is a word, and sometimes hostility, but then they figure out, it's like, oh, you are the same person, fuck, okay. And those kind of little battles where you win somebody over by understanding that homosexuality and your sexuality does not define you as a person, I think is actually more powerful than people deciding to protest in the street and go into cathedrals making a fuss. And my personal views on this aren't really relevant, but he was like, they are making my life harder because these gay activists and these, like, activists in Russia make a huge fuss. They end up seeking political asylum in other countries. They get to leave Russia, and they've made the circumstances in Russia for people like him who just want to get on with their lives
much, much worse, because now when an average Russian person thinks about gay people, they think about people who are trying to shove propaganda down the public's throat. And that is kind of like a problematic thing, right?
Haven't you made similar criticisms of, say, we didn't talk about this when we discussed the gay pride march, but I know that you said to me previously that sometimes gay activists who can be in Britain can be sort of that upfront and confrontational. Mm-hmm. And I know your opinion sort of changed a little bit on this recently.
Yeah.
I mean, how confrontational should you be then? Are there times when you should be confrontational, times when, you know, maybe you should back off?
So you cannot be confrontational in Russia and not expect for there to be consequences, just because of the kind of state that it is.
Sure.
Russia is not France or Germany or the UK or America, where they are still kind of like on a democratic journey, for want of a better word.
It's very optimistic. I think
that they are, because you go around Russia and they have hipsters. They have people living very lovely, quaint, middle-class lives. And the thing that I think I kind of realised and discovered when I was over there was the fact that gay people are part of the distraction, because Russia's economy is not doing fantastically at the moment, because of international sanctions, because of international relations. Gay people are, in those kinds of circumstances, you turn to the other. I don't want to fall into Godwin's law too quickly, but look at Hitler. And gay people happen to be part of that, as are Muslims, as are immigrants in general in Russia.
So in a roundabout way, are you saying if the West wasn't quite so confrontational with Russia, it would actually improve the rights of minorities?
Yeah, if the West was serious about improving the lives of minorities in Russia and the human rights of people in Russia, then they need to make stuff better in Russia for the population in general. And that can be through improving economic relations, improving relations when it comes to diplomacy. I'm thinking of Crimea, because the majority of people in Russia think that Crimea was actually a really good thing, whether they're gay, straight, or whatever. Every Russian person that I spoke to was like, but Crimea's us. And it's framed very similarly in the way that the UK kind of went into the Falklands and took back the Falklands, because Russia is still kind of like it was the USSR that got split up, and people believe that certain boundaries were drawn incorrectly. But yeah, if the West is really serious about improving the gay lives, the lives of gay people in Russia, then they need to stop making sensationalist Vice documentaries about it, and they need to actually start making the lives of normal Russians better, so that they can stop using, so that people like Vladimir Putin can stop using gay people as a scapegoat and as a distraction to the wider economic problems that the country is having.
But there are still countries that have very high standards of living and are actually still very socially conservative. So I'm thinking principally of places like Singapore, which have, you know, very long lifespans, good medical systems, low crime, etc., etc. But they still very, as I said, very socially conservative. So is there any guarantee that what you said would actually inevitably lead to, you know, the rolling out of rights for LGBT people?
So you look at Singapore, and I don't know, but like homosexuality is still like legislated against. It's ignored. The fact that those laws still exist is purely symbolic.
But my wider point is authoritarianism doesn't necessarily collapse when the economy improves.
No, but gay people in Singapore, of which there are loads, by the way, are allowed to march and are allowed to go out to gay clubs and to hold people's hands in the street. And because it's an incredibly prosperous nation, despite the fact that in general the island is very conservative, gay people can do whatever they want. They can live a really relaxed life, and I think that is probably a model that is going to be more similar to Russia in the future, perhaps, that gay people are going to be allowed to get on. And the marriage conversation is something that's going to happen in like 50 years in Russia, I think, but the primary objective, I think, should be making gay people's lives less shit. And you do that through ways other than like sanctions and making it allowed for us so that you can go to other countries.
So just to sort of wrap this up, because almost at time, but is there anything, like, having been to Russia, you come back to the UK, is there anything about the way the UK handles gay rights, or that you think maybe could be improved, having gone to Russia and seen it in a slightly different context?
So I think that this is the problem, actually, that people try and draw comparisons between incredibly different countries with incredibly different histories. And I feel like the two nations can learn from each other, but too often, especially the West, expects that it can pick up the gay liberation movement that happened in the 70s and 80s and transplant it into another nation and it will work fantastically well. And it just won't. Because that country needs to come to the same conclusions that we came to on its own back.
But are there any lessons for the UK that can be drawn from Russia as this goes?
Off the top of my head, no.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
UK better than Russia then in this instance?
I mean, for me, yeah. like, obviously, being gay in Russia is still really shit, and I deliberately did go out there trying to kind of change misconceptions of Reggie Yates documentaries and...
Is there anything that surprised you, though, while you were out there that you weren't expecting to find?
How accepting homophobic people were of me and how they reacted to me when they figured out that I was just a nice guy. The biggest problem with homophobia in Russia is that nobody knows a gay person. And so it's very possible to be like, oh yeah, all gay people in Russia, all gay Russians are American sympathizers and they all just want to destroy Russia and Russian culture and the Russian family. And then they get to know a gay person, realize that we're fine. Some of us wear top knots. But in general, we're all fine. And that's where the battle is won, right? I think. Anyway. But it's unfortunately the long, hard slog that means that there is, in the short term, going to be a hard ride for a lot of LGBT Russian folks. But it's the only way that you're going to be able to do it without mass resentment throughout the country.
Okay. If you have any of your own thoughts about this, particularly if you're listening to this from a country that's not in the UK, it'd be interesting to hear other perspectives about this issue. If you've been to Russia as well and have any insight on that.
Or if you are Russian.
Indeed. And if Jazz is going to be putting up some of those interviews and bits of footage that you talked about earlier.
I mean, yeah, eventually.
at some point within the next year, those will go up.
Yeah.
And you can find us at all the usual channels.
Yes. So. Shall we tell them what the usual channels are?
Nah, I think they can figure it out.
At Right Dishonor on Twitter, rightdishonorable.com on the internet.
And there'll probably be a SoundCloud and a Facebook when we get around to it.
Oh, God, let's not push the boat out too much.
Don't go crazy.
The Queen was on the front page of The Sun this week.
Yes, on Saturday.
Doing a Nazi salute. It's not what you think, though, because she was only 7 in the picture. And The Sun went with the really fancy title in the very Sun way of Her Royal Highness.
It's a good pun. It's a good pun.
I mean... good.
Are any puns really good?
And basically the things that we know about this picture is that it was probably taken by her father King George, that it was under like her, the Queen Mother and the Queen are both in it, they are both doing the Nazi salute, and we know that the Queen's uncle, who was the previous king, was a Nazi sympathizer. And we also know that this was taken 6 years before the outbreak of World War II.
So it's 33,
right?
Yeah.
Back when an awful lot of people, including the Daily Mail, actually, thought that Hitler was actually a pretty decent duck guy and he was doing great things for Germany. I just think it's in really bad taste. Really, that this was chosen to be a front page image.
So are you saying they should have like tucked this into like page 7 or something?
So I was talking about this with Ben Cook on Twitter, having one of our many Twitter spats, and it just makes me feel really uneasy because it allows for people to take it out of context, and the way that it is presented, although there is kind of like some background as to like the time and the fact that her uncle was a Nazi sympathizer, and she is 7 years old in the photo and clearly has no idea what the implications of doing a Nazi salute are. Having that on the front page creates sensationalism and does not really allow for the kind of nuanced discussions that these kinds of things probably should be handled with. What do you think? Help me understand this, Jimmy.
See, I agree with what you say about slanting it towards the Queen is a bit disingenuous because, as you say, she was seven, wouldn't have understood the implications of what she was doing. However, I think it is a really interesting insight into the royal family. It's not news that Edward was a Nazi sympathiser. There's lots of, you know, pretty bad implications about Edward's character in general.
He was the one who abdicated from the throne and then copped off with an American.
He copped off with the American first.
Then abdicated the throne.
That's not why he was a bad person, but there's lots of... The Nazi thing is just one thing that sort of sheds a bad light on his character. But I think the way the sort of... It's just the way it's played out and the response from Buckingham Palace, which has been to say, you know, yeah, this is, you know, this did happen, this is legitimate footage, but... The way it sort of said, like, talked about finding out where the leak came from and all of this stuff, and it just...
It's like, so it was leaked, right? And it's, but it's, so it's a private photo, technically. I don't want... So she's the head of state. So her private life, to a certain extent, is of interest.
Sure.
Yeah. But I also think that this is particularly irrelevant. It doesn't tell you anything about her as a monarch. This was 70 plus years ago?
It doesn't tell you about her as a monarch, but it does tell you about the family that she came from. Mm-hmm. And the way the royal family works is that they try and put as nice a spin on who they are as people as possible, which is quite difficult given that in some respects they're not very nice people. and I think this is great because it kind of breaks through this kind of gloss on who they are. They're just ordinary people, and in the sense that they have, you know, political opinions, some of which are kind of wacky. In some respects I imagine they're quite an old-fashioned family, just because, you know, of things like this, but also the role they actually serve in terms of the British constitution. They would have to be kind of old-fashioned to actually endorse it. So I actually think it's a great story, you know, because it does actually show that the royal family were not particularly nice people, maybe back in the 30s.
So I think that even saying that is particularly disingenuous. And yes, Jimmy, I'm calling you disingenuous.
A monarchist shill.
For those of you who haven't been following the monarchy saga at the Right Dishonourable, I'm a bit of a monarchist, and Jimmy hates them and wants a republic.
I don't hate them. I just think that they should, you know, they've no right to be there.
Hates them and wants a republic. So I... Oh, fuck, what was I going to say? I can't remember. What did you just say?
I said that it does show an insight into how the royal family works.
So I don't think that it particularly says anything about the royal family in the 1930s, because there were lots of people who agreed with Hitler before, you know, the whole Jewish genocide thing.
It was really popular then.
It was really popular then, because back then Hitler wasn't a... person who was massacring millions of Jews. He was like a socialist leader of Germany who was turning into a powerhouse after the war.
In 1933, he was already rolling out a lot of the policies that, you know, would end up earning him his bad name. But it wasn't widely known about them, which I guess is the point that you're getting to. But even so, there's the only way that the monarchy can be defended is by pretending that the royal family have no political opinions, which is in part why the whole spider memos thing, where Charles,
Prince
Charles's letters were leaked to government ministers were leaked. That's why that was so embarrassing, is because they have to pretend these people have no politics, whereas obviously they do have politics. You know, members of the royal family are very well informed. They're very well connected. Mm-hmm. They would obviously have views on things. And it's just an absolute farce that manages to, you know, prop up the whole royal family and the whole monarchist system in Britain.
But then so let's not get into the wider should we have a monarchy debate. Do you think that it was right for the Sun to report it as it did?
Yeah. Oh, well, what was it? It was right for them to report it. I think if you got hold of that information,
then you kind of have to. I agree with that.
You have to put it out.
What do you think about the way that they did it?
Well, it's the Sun, so, you know, that's the way they report things. You know.
Do you think that this is going to damage the royal family in any way?
I don't think it'll damage them significantly. I think one of the most astounding things about the Windsors is how impervious they are to any significant damage over the long term.
I mean, Diana was a thing.
Diana was a thing, but, you know, if you can survive, you know, not refusing to publicly mourn when the most popular, you know, member of the royal family dies,
mm-hmm.
then you can probably survive this.
But then opinion polls kind of changed when Helen Mirren started playing the Queen, so it's fine. I think in a lot of people's heads, Helen Mirren is our monarch and not Queen Elizabeth II. How would you have, perhaps, if you were editor of The Sun, or if you were editor of the Right Dishonourable newspaper... which it will never happen. And this image came across your desk. How would you have reported it differently?
I probably would have just said, instead of focusing on the Queen, I would have focused on the royals, you know, doing Nazi salutes.
But it is the photo of the Queen as a child doing the salute.
Yeah, but, you know, if you come across, like, some hick family in the south of the United States and, you know, the seven-year-old is, like, a bit of a racist, you're like, that's really unfortunate. But you blame the parents, don't you? You don't actually blame the kids. So, I mean, I don't think that there's no suggestion that she actually has views anywhere near like that now. So, you know, what does...
I mean, she loves Elton John, so I don't think that she has anything against the gays, at least.
Are there any neo-Nazis that like Elton John? Please write into the Right to Sunrise.
Elton John is apparently very popular in Russia. Get back to Russia.
There you go. I rest my case.
Yeah. So the issue that I have about this is that it was focused around the Queen herself.
Mm.
And I certainly... I probably did a Nazi salute at some point when I was a toddler. What do you think that the Sun were trying to say? Other than sell papers, do you think they were trying to do anything nuanced about it?
It's a better story with when you focus on the Queen than when you focus on the royal family from the 1930s, because mm-hmm. it's more contemporary. People know a lot more about the Queen, or, you know, the Queen's far more in people's heads. It's just a better story. From a journalist's point of view, they went with the right angle, but from a actually shedding light on the mm-hmm. situation point of view, they went with the wrong angle. But, you know, it's the Sun, so.
So I'm going to ask you, so bearing in mind I'm the royalist and Jimmy hates them and wants a republic, what do you see happening to the royal family once Queen Elizabeth dies? Because she will eventually die and there will eventually be a new monarch.
I think that it really depends how long Charles gets,
mm-hmm.
basically, because I think the popularity of William and Kate Middleton is so unassailable at this point. Because
she's got really good hair.
Well, you know, she's really attractive. He looks like, you know...
The babies are so cute.
He looks like a low-grade bank clerk, but, you know, she makes up for it. And they've very well press managed. You mm-hmm. know, they don't... they've not done anything embarrassing. William has largely kept his opinions to himself, so... Yeah,
I managed to not dress up as a Nazi,
yes.
which is what his brother Prince Harry did.
I suppose there's possibility of more embarrassments from Prince Harry, because there was that whole Las Vegas video of him, you know, doing whatever,
playing like
strip poker or something.
Strip pool or strip snooker,
fine, yeah.
I think.
Because
the game was the important bit.
He's a liability, but yeah, the Windsors should be all right for the time being, you know, unless I'm left in charge, in which case it's over.
Which I'm going to make sure never actually happens. Thank you very much for listening to The Right Dishonourable. I have been Jazza.
I've been Jimmy.
You can follow Jimmy on...
JD Nichols.
On Twitter.
Twitter, yes.
At Twitter.
At Twitter. On.
And you can follow me at Jazza John, JazzaJohn. We've been The Right Dishonourable, and please leave us like a star. Or
please leave us
five
stars. Don't leave us one star.
Just leave us any stars, because it helps with SEO in general. And leave us a review if you've got a spare 5 minutes, because that really, really helps us out. And share the podcast around if you enjoy listening to us in your ears, because it means that we keep on being able to do it, hopefully, possibly,
in
maybe.
In your ears.
Yeah.
In your ears.
Yeah. There's... What? Why are you looking at me like that? Jimmy's being a dick, so we're gonna go now. Bye.